Sound Pages is a literary series featuring resident artists in the Jackstraw Writers Program.
Adulthood feels like a severed hand because one must have such control, yet one has very little.
This program features the work of 2015 writer Janine Walker. She spoke with curator Kevin Kraft about her work.
So family seems to be an important theme for you. Can you tell me a little bit more about that? How does that become the subject of your poetry?
My parents divorced when I was 10, and it was a really traumatic experience for me. But what I'm working on is I wrote a poem called Divorce that the best way to say it is sort of a psychotherapy kind of answer, where I think I had healed enough that I could sit with it and look at it. You know, it's like that moment affected my whole family, obviously not just me. And I think for a long time I felt like it was something I was dealing with, and now I can look at it in a poetic way because I can see the sort of beautiful effect that a trauma like that has on everybody, that bonds us even though we're not a family in the same way anymore.
Yeah, I mean, there are emotional subjects that we might have difficulty approaching, and there are others that we can readily approach. And family seems to be somewhere in a transitional phase for you. And so I'm wondering why or how does poetry help you understand that aspect of your life in ways that just living doesn't?
Just by living, I don't think I could really understand it as much as, you know, then there's living and just being an active person, but mm-hmm. there's also the self-reflection that comes in conversation. And so, and through that, you know, I can kind of understand it better, but poetry just has a potential to have a deeper kind of understanding because it's beyond, ironically, I think it's beyond words in a way.
What do you love about it?
Oh, it's just fun. It's so fun. It feels really rich, and it feels like life is more meaningful because of poetry. A lot of poems that I've written, it's like something will happen on Tuesday, and then the poem I wrote right Friday takes some aspect of that, and it turns it into something else. Like, it's just really fun and playful and imaginative, and it's just a great way to engage with the world.
Now we'll hear a selection from Janine's live reading.
Thanks, everybody, for being here. Super exciting. I just want to say, I guess as a way of introduction, that my parents divorced in 1987, and there's a lot I could say about that. But instead of saying a lot, I will just say that it took me a really long time to understand that this feeling that is in me, that shapes my perspective on everything and has had me looking for a new definition of home for myself for years and years, and certainly has shaped the way that I write poems and the content that appeals to me, was born in that moment when my mom said, "We're getting a divorce." I can feel that. And so recently, a lot of poems have come out of that moment. So I'm going to share some of those poems and a few others that are from these other searches for other kinds of homes. First one is called "The World Became Heat." The heat sank into us and became us. Heat wrapped its hands around us. Heat has strong hands. The world was on fire. The world became heat. It sank into us and became us. A world on fire burns as ferociously as a tiger's snarl. I'm sorry. It's the best I can come up with. I am heat now. I am fire. The world, a fist of fire, burns within me and I speak. The world is a fist of fire. Our dictionaries reflect this. What burns will not be what remains. The future is always uncertain, but it is hot. What remains will be the fact of burning. Future people will watch the burning from their windows and know it is the world. They will be burning, and inside of them will be fire, but not fists. This one will be the central poem for this manuscript I am completing tomorrow, I guess. Divorce. The house stood still like a horse, big eyes a blink, and the unknowing few moments before a shot. No one came out and no one went inside. The inhabitants of the house, a family, sat together around a wooden picnic table painted white. The father sat in his sadness, which was pale yellow and pulled around him like a yoke. Words stayed over on the neighbor's doorstep where they pecked at the rice thrown out for the birds. Adulthood feels like opening a door only to find a severed hand and then to realize it is your own. He sat in his sadness, which is to say he felt his tongue swell and it muted his words. A finger depressed the trigger. The horse fell hard into the wall. Adulthood feels like a severed hand because one must have such control, yet one has very little. The mother sat with her hands clasped, fingers like lines of conjecture in a history book. Even admission or confession does not make a statement true. The word love and its negation cut a hole through the house, the shape of a bullet. The children buried their faces in their knees, pressed their palms into red eyes. The blood of the horse soaked through three mops. Guests had always admired the house's lashes. They said, "What big eyes, how much you must see." The next two are from reflecting the time I spent in Korea, which was 3 years, when I taught English and ate a lot of kimchi and just absolutely loved it. It's a great country and a great place to be. This one is called First Evening on a Lake. The children paddle a boat with a bow the head of a dragon. Up above, a seagull flies thin as a pencil, drawing a long line across the sky. I place my left hand on one side of the line and my right on the other. For a full minute, there is nothing in the sky but my two hands. Then the seagull flies back across the sky, taking his line with him. Now nothing separates my one hand from the other. Outside, two lambs. The people seem more curious in winter. Everywhere I go is a stare, or I hear someone calling my name. If I turn, it is just people eating. If I don't turn, perhaps no one is there, or maybe someone is calling my name. He says what he says. He is Korean. He says it softly. In his eyes, there's a softness like two boys sleeping. The food here is not good, he asks. He's sorry. No, I say. I follow him. I say it softly. Outside, two lambs stand dumbly in the road. It is strange. It is a busy street. They settle down in front of a jacket store. They must be warm, and soon they're sleeping. Sorry, he says again, his mouth almost still. Take spoon, he says. I know, I say. Of his cheeks there is a structure like an older boy with marks of aging. The lambs wake and take to the street, shifting further into danger. A child tries to lift one of them. The animal says nothing. It moans. People seem more curious in winter. The boy shifts his feet, lowers his eyes, and bows to say goodbye. I tell him, maybe someone is calling my name. This is another one in the family realm. My oldest brother also ended up getting a divorce, and I've never shared this poem with him or with my other brother who's here, but I'm really happy to be sharing it with all of you. It's called My Brother Came Home to an Empty House. Surely he recalled the old porch, our family members dissolving into the screens like tabs of acid on the tongue. I remember clear his tears that day, how they pooled beneath his eyes in ponds I thought only mine could make. His dining room table gone, his children too, so young they danced at the fact of two houses, new beds, new bedrooms, old table. The front light stayed on. Maybe she'd left it lit for him. The emptiness was a tunnel hollowed out beneath the DMZ. Even those who flee are again caught on the other side. That day in our family, Dad asked me to leave with him. Mom insisted we all stay with her. All I knew was that to go would have meant to not stay. The phone pressed hard into our ears. He told me she'll come back to pick up things the kids left. He climbed the stairs, found a strewn shoe. "Grace's shoes," he said. "Grace left her little pink shoes. How do you handle a thing like shoes?" Together we went through the new sparseness of his house. He closed the door to the room where his wife had slept. We engaged in a long and steady silence across the line. No words could fill that empty house. Gone were their late night travels down the stairs, gone the hair beneath his hand as he smoothed a head to sleep. In the silence she left, we both heard the clamor of a storm. It was happening in his town and in mine. We'd stood together in the tunnels between North Korea and South Korea. People lost their lives down there trying to escape. Years later on the news, I'd see the anguished face of a man who just wanted to get back to his family. I would always say, "I can't even imagine that kind of separation." Then I thought, "No, wait, no, I can." This one is called Chasing the Storm. Its eye is right ahead of you above the crown of Tinker Mountain, and you tell your friend, the driver, that you expect the two of you will reach it by nightfall. She lights another cigarette to shake off the nerves of the storm that fumbles houses' wires and makes lovers hang up their telephones. You let your arm dangle from the window and remember the soft part of your brother's hair. It curved much like this road. It was gray if the air was dim. It buckled and froze. You think then of your mother with a black comb sifting through his hair like flour as she held his head beneath the sink, scrubbed, and told him, "Tomorrow you will not go into the woods." And tomorrow he didn't. He stayed inside and sat at the window, watching the neighbors as a storm gathered them up and tossed them into their houses. Chained dogs howled at the disappearance of their reflections. Cans rattled against evening as the storm set and darkened the hallway of the road. Cars drove with headlights shining like moles. Father was late coming home from wherever, and you sat in the corner next to your brother, watching how the storm crafted itself in the shine of his hair, how clean it was, how loose and softly elegant. I think I have time for just one more. This one is called The Question of Why. I ask her, "What kind of mother do you want to be?" It's winter in Seattle, and the fog looks like snow beneath the street lamps. I can trace the actions that got me here, but the why stays obscured, like the markered lines of an erasure in a book most people never understood the importance of. She sits against the opposite wall, a shadow made from street lamp and window pane. My father is in his home in Florida, working on landscaping on his knees. He is not begging her anymore. She shakes her head when I ask. She says, "I don't know what you mean." "What kind of wife do you want to be?" I follow. I am relentless. She isn't my father's wife anymore. She is someone else's wife now. Sometimes I thought that meant she was also a mother to some other daughter. I could picture them, my mother smoothing her hair down as they both looked out a window. There was no other daughter, though. It was just that she may have mothered my absence. Maybe I am the shadow on the other side of her room. Maybe my spine is the one formed by the intersection of street lamp and window pane. I am old enough and long gone enough to make this kind of impression in my mother's room. My father loved both her and the life she represented. He didn't see why he had to let go of that life. I learned my habits of letting go from my father. Mostly neither of us ever does let go. I do everything I can until whatever I'm trying is exhausted. Only then do I slump down in a corner. Only then can I admit defeat. Currently, I am into asking the shadow of my mother why she left my father. My propensity towards a deep honesty is appealing to some people. Others, it makes them turn away. I want to know what kind of mother she wants to be, what kind of a wife. I don't have anything in mind as far as a good answer goes. I just don't know. That's what I tell her when she says the same. I just don't know. I don't know. Thank you.
Sound Pages is a Jack Straw production. The 2015 curator of this program is Kevin Kraft. This episode of Sound Pages was produced by Mo Preventure. Recording engineers are C.J. Lazenby, Tom Stiles, Mo Preventure, Daniel Gunther, and Steve DeTore. Narrator is Alyssa Keene, and executive director of Jackstraw Cultural Center is Joan Rabinowitz. Theme music by St. Helens String Quartet, produced through the Jackstraw Artist Support Program. The Jackstraw Writers Program is made possible with support from the City of Seattle Office of Arts and Culture, 4Culture King County Lodging Tax Fund, the Washington State Arts Commission, the National Endowment for the Arts, Arts Fund, and individual contributors. Special thanks to Power to Give donor Linda Brenneman. All of the writers heard in this series are published in the Jackstraw Writers Anthology, available for purchase, and featured online at jackstraw.org. Thank you for listening.